Welcome to Pockets, the podcast where Fabian, my dear friend, and I explore the pockets of movies and life. He made me laugh before we started to record. Hello, doll.
Hi, this is Brenda Vaccaro. That's what I'm going to sound like today because I've got this thing. I guess
lurking in your throat.
I ate Kermit the Frog and he was delicious. All that sweetness. He was a lot sweeter than I expected.
Oh my God. A little
bit of bacon flavor to it, too. I don't know where that came from, but
and Miss Piggy was in a really good mood when you met up with him. So guys, just a couple things before we start our podcast today, and that is we are very aware of the audio issues that we've been experiencing in some of our episodes. We really are leaning towards two mics are better than one because everyone can hear us better. But we are aware that there is some static and it kind of cuts out some words. As I always say, we're the little podcast who could, so just bear with us. We're working through it. If they're still repeating on this podcast, I'm going to update my microphone and see if that will help. The other thing I didn't want to forget to mention is often Fabian and I thank friends from afar for listening and commenting on the show. But what we don't do is comment and thank our local friends who are so loyal to us from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Our first listeners, the ones who bolstered us to keep going, keep doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and gave really constructive,
wonderful
advice.
Thoughts and advice. So we love you guys. We're not going to list each name, but just
most
know,
of you.
We like most of you, and thank you. Thank you for just the love and support. We really love you.
We really do.
All right, so this is this show is going to be about identity theft.
Sort of identity, kind of. Maybe self-identity, because you never know what's going to come up in our conversation.
That's true.
Self-identity, or you know what's another thing I've been thinking about a lot? Because like last episodes, I did create another playlist, Spotify playlist.
Right.
And the theme is facades. So all the songs are about identity, but not just identity. It's about fooling oneself.
Right.
Some of the themes. And I think that's what we will be talking about. Fooling ourselves or being fooled by someone.
Right.
Or the facade that we put when we're with people.
Facing the window. And also, you're kind of sometimes you're a different person with different groups of friends.
For sure.
Or individuals.
You know
friends.
What I call this? The Thelma and Louise syndrome. In some cases, for sure, well, I don't know. Actually, I think you and I might both be Thelmas. You know, like at my house, I'm definitely Thelma. I'm definitely Louise and Dave is Thelma.
Okay.
You know, he's more easygoing and I'm the one who know everything has to be perfect.
Okay.
You know, I've got my scarf on. I'm ready to get my convertible car and drive and everything is perfect.
Right.
Thelma, no. Thelma wants to have a good time. She's easygoing.
Ah.
So it changes with who you're with.
Yeah.
I'm really a Thelma, but in my house, I'm definitely Louise.
Interesting.
So what about you and me?
I think with you and me, I feel very much Thelmas. Like we're kind of easygoing.
I think we're both Thelmas, but if we had to pick one, I think you would be Louise.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sloppy. Look how you have everything organized. You can't see this, but she has two beautiful bottles of gin. She has water out for us. She has beautiful fruit and olives. I mean, it's beautifully done. Everything is in perfect order. So I'm going to go with your Louise
and
I'm Thelma today.
I'm not anal about anything, but I am. You're right. Like things have to be a certain way for me, no doubt. And I think you're right. Maybe I am Louise.
And it does change with different people.
It absolutely does.
So we have different facades.
Yeah. One of my dearest friends who lives in Wisconsin, we've been friends for over 20 years now, and I've often wondered why she's my friend. She's very successful, serious, you know, just wonderful businesswoman. She just became president of her company.
And I
say to myself,
what
is this broad doing loving me? But so very much
wait a
Thelma
minute.
And Louise.
Yeah,
well,
but
because
no.
I don't,
no.
You know,
now we're going
I don't
a whole
have that
other
level of success.
We are going somewhere completely different. I cannot not bring it up that you would say, obviously, how could I not? You're saying this woman is amazing. She's successful and she's wonderful. Why is she my friend?
Yes.
That That is something, you're not a Cancer. That's something a Cancer would say. We're the ones that are insecure.
I'm a down and out Libra. No. Okay. No, it's just, I think I do unconsciously value myself in this, and I downgrade myself because I have not been monetarily successful. Yes, I've had a film in a film festival, several
Look,
film festivals.
I have not had monetary, I've never had financial success either at all. And
a lot of artists don't.
But you know what you get when you do that? I've said this before, probably during one of our podcasts. Comparison is the thief of joy. And if we're going
this
to be, there's always going to be someone who's more successful than you. And there's always going to be someone who is much less successful than
it's
you.
It's true, Fabian. You know? And I have so much gratitude in my life.
I know
for
you do.
My life. I really
I know
do.
You do, of course.
But that's a kind thing to say. And it's something I need to remember because I was just even speaking with my cousin about this a couple weeks ago. At least I'm trying. Like I've written a script with 5 episodes for a murder mystery here in Santa Barbara about 2 middle-aged women who are food caterers.
Ooh.
And they own a food truck. And wherever they go, there's murder. I like this dog that's in the food truck completely against, you know, health laws.
Yeah, but hidden. He's hidden.
He's hidden. Big German shepherd hidden. Anyway, but it never got anywhere. I had the script reader for Family Guy read it and gave me some wonderful feedback. But of course, it's hard to just get things moving. Do you know what I mean?
Anyway, believe me, if anybody knows.
I know.
So many things I've attempted.
Same.
Didn't go anywhere.
So many things.
So really, we're changing this to podcast for losers. Is that it? Is that what we're doing?
No.
Okay, wait. I just want to. I want to be very clear on
yes,
something.
Yes.
I want to be very clear before we continue.
Okay.
Failure. The idea of failure. My whole life. Most of my life, the majority of my life, has been. I've been so afraid of failing at something
right.
that I don't even attempt it.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is the quote says, you've already failed from not trying. And one of the greatest, I know she's, you know, either it's a very love-hate, very divisive thing right now with J.K. Rowling, but she did.
I love her still.
She
I'm
made
sorry.
The most amazing commencement speech years ago, where the entire speech was based on the lessons she learned from failure.
Right.
And I recommend everyone to YouTube it and watch it.
I will, Fabian.
I watch it every 3 months or so.
Kind of like to bolster yourself.
It's fantastic.
I have to tell you, Isaac Mizrahi has an amazing podcast, and the theme is failure. And he talks to his guests about their fear of failure and how they failed and what they learned from failure.
Wow.
It's fantastic. You should definitely, it's one of my favorite podcasts.
Yeah.
But anyway, guys, we kind of segued. So apologies for that.
Not Fabian, apologies. I think it's a good thing. It still goes to part of identity, really.
Yeah, that's true, sweet.
It does.
That's really
We're sticking
true.
To the theme.
We're sticking to the theme.
We're expanding.
All right. Well, listen, guys. The first known case of identity theft dates back to the biblical era.
Wait a minute. The reason because this is specifically about identity theft.
Right.
I think we should make it clear that we have watched the miniseries on Netflix.
What's
Ripley.
Started it all.
This is what started this whole thing.
Talented
watching
Mr. Ripley.
Ripley on Netflix.
And Ripley.
The 8-part miniseries. That is absolutely gorgeous.
I can't remember Hot Priest's name. What is his name?
I don't know. I got to meet him and everything. And
at
the film festival.
Tell me more.
He was wearing...
I almost hate you right now.
He was
Go
wearing
on.
A cream-colored... Listen to this. I have a picture, actually. He was wearing a cream-colored lace shirt and pants. They were incredible and beautiful.
Andrew Scott is his
name. Andrew Scott, that's it.
He, in Fleabag, was wonderful as the hot priest. But you got to meet that little nugget.
Just for a second,
in
but
real
yeah.
life.
Yeah, he's very sweet. He looks exactly the same. He's exactly the same.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, but anyway, we watched this amazing show with the most incredible cinematography seen in a long time.
Right.
And that's why we thought
this
identity crisis
sparked.
Is fascinating. Where did
I
that
agree.
What's the first known case of identity crisis, Jen?
I'm thinking like Jason what's the
Jesus Christ. No, before It precedes
Melissa
him.
McCarthy and Jason Bateman.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Was that the first note? No, it wasn't.
I really love that movie, though. I did love it. I love the two
love
of them.
That movie.
They are good. They're a good
when
team.
When she punched him in the throat or she got punched in the throat. I can't.
They're a good team.
Listen, in all seriousness, the first known case of identity theft dates back to the biblical era.
Of course.
Specifically the story of Jacob and Esau. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, Esau.
Esau. in the book of Genesis. In this story, Jacob, with the help of his mother, Rebecca, spelled very differently, everyone, deceives his blind father, Isaac, into believing that he is his elder twin, Esau. This deception was carried out so that Jacob could receive the blessing and inheritance intended for the firstborn. Jacob disguised himself by wearing Esau's clothes and covering his arms and neck with skins of goats. Oh, my fear of goats. To mimic his brother's hairy skin. This act of deceit committed for personal gain.
His brother was like Robin Williams, just to get a visual. Go ahead. Have you seen his arms? Oh, my God.
That okay. Really is. That's you don't yeah. Forget that. No, you don't forget it once you see it.
Please continue.
God bless, Robin. This act of deceit committed for personal gain at the expense of another's identity could be considered one of the earliest recorded instances of identity theft, and that's if you believe that the Bible is true.
I want you to know that we have a mutual... Just 2 days ago, I told her what the theme was going to be
right.
For the podcast. And I said, do you know what the first case of the podcast is? Do you know that it was in the Bible? And she said, yeah, it was Esau, right? She knew the entire story. She knew the goat.
Who is this?
You tell me. She knew about the goat.
Jane?
No. Our dear, dear, gorgeous, beautiful, I adore Liz Brady.
Liz
knew
Brady.
Every deal. She knew more than what you just said. She knew all of it. The whole story. Amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's not Catholic. Remember that Catholics don't read. They're told the Bible by the priests.
No, but she was raised Christian.
Christians read the Bible. Catholics, they're told.
Yeah, we pick and choose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. But anyway, isn't that fascinating?
That is wonderful. Yeah. Love Liz Brady. All right, you're up, doll. I'm going to get us more ice while you tell everybody.
All right. Ice, baby. It's 80 degrees today in Santa Barbara, so it is. It's warm. Two more historical cases of identity theft, though not as ancient as the biblical example, still come from periods long before the term identity theft. You hear those clinking? Isn't that the beautiful sound? You know who we sound like? We sound like Judy Garland. Have you ever heard the recordings of Judy Garland?
Oh.
What? Judy Garland.
No. Well, doesn't she rail on Marlena?
She rails on everyone. She bought they gave her a tape recorder so that she could record her biography.
Oh my God, Fabe.
And she's pressing, and you can hear the clinking of her glass every time she takes a sip. She'll say, I'm a angry woman. She'll sip.
I have to listen to
these.
Oh
my God, it's amazing. It's crazy. Okay.
All right, I hit the wire. Hopefully we didn't hear a static there, guys. Go on.
It might be the ghost of Judy Garland coming through the wires. Anyway, this is a very interesting case. And yes, way before identity theft was coined.
Even conceived.
But one of the earliest is in the 16th century of France, and it was Martin Guerre. That means Martin War. Martin Guerre. It's a famous case of identity theft that occurred in the 16th century. He was a peasant who left his wife, child, and village in France. And several years later, a man claiming to be Martin returned and lived in Guerre's...
With his wife.
Yeah, and son for 3 years. He was eventually tried in court when doubts about his true identity arose. Huh. It turned out the man was actually Arnaud Dutille.
Well done.
Who had assumed Martin Guerre's identity. This case has been the subject of numerous books, films, and a play illustrating the dramatic impact of early identity theft. In fact,
like, how would she not know? What were you going to say?
One of our movies that we touched, Summersby, is the American version of
Richard Gere.
Yeah. And Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster. Because there's a believable movie. A really good movie.
And there's a believable couple.
Well, yeah, I believed it for the times, right? Now.
You know, I don't know. I love Jodie Foster. I adore her, but
right,
a woman living out in the country with a husband. She would be doing all the work. She's too tough to be.
Yeah.
You know, I don't. She doesn't play weak. You know, demure. That is not for
that's
me.
That's actually good.
I just don't see it.
And I also can't conceive, and we have to do something. We have to put these microphones higher because I'm always leaning over like a hunchback.
Yeah, but it's good for creating the hunchback,
yeah,
which is what we want. So you can look like my grandmother.
All right, we have got to focus, for God's sake. Listen, how does she not know that that was not her husband? I would know. Wouldn't you know if it wasn't Dave, if Nick Nolte showed up?
Yeah, but do you think that sometimes, and I'm sure this has been made into a film, when you know they're not the real person, but there's something better than the original person. Maybe he's kinder or nicer or he's great in the sack. There's something,
and maybe
she lets it go and it's other people
who knows.
So maybe that could be something that. And then somebody else is like, this is not my son. This is not like the families come by and say, this is not who he is. Maybe that's why. I don't know. I'm just saying, maybe in Summersby that was the case. She might have known it wasn't the husband,
he was nicer than the original. Yeah, yeah, I think
it happens.
You're right.
It happens. You know what? Those replacements, they happen. They sometimes get better.
Are you going to talk about Tichborne Clément or?
And then it's 19th century in England.
Yeah,
this is the Tichborne Clément in 19th century England.
Did you love what I? The Tichborne.
Tichborne. It's like the you know what? I think this might be what inspired the Bourne identity. It's the Tichborne identity. This case involved a man who claimed to be Sir Roger Tichborne, a baronet, not even a baron. He was a tiny baron. He was a baronet.
Okay.
And the heir to a large estate, who was presumed dead after a shipwreck in 1854. In 1866, a butcher from Wagga Wagga, Australia, came forward claiming he was the missing Sir Roger.
Oh.
Despite physical differences and the lack of familiarity with Sir Roger's life, he convinced many people, including Sir Roger's mother, that he was the rightful heir.
Wow.
However, doubts and legal battles ensued for years. Eventually, he was exposed as Arthur Orton. Wow. Not so great. A butcher from where? Wapping. And was convicted of perjury. That's it. This case remains one of the most notorious instances of attempted identity theft and inheritance fraud in history.
Wow. What this was
pretty fascinating.
19th century.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Even in ancient societies, identity theft occurred, albeit in much more rudimentary form. For instance, in ancient Rome, individuals might steal wax seals or forge documents to impersonate others for financial gain or access privileges.
Which Ripley does.
Indeed. We can't forget to we'll mention the French one later. But anyway, Middle Ages, guys. And during the Middle Ages, with the development of written records and official documentation, identity theft became much more organized and sophisticated. For example, in medieval Europe, criminals might steal the identities of deceased individuals to claim their inheritances or properties.
Nothing changes. People still do that now.
Absolutely.
Still do that now.
In ancient times, it was going on. It's crazy. The rise of modern bureaucracy and the expansion of banking systems facilitated new opportunities for identity theft in the 19th century. Forged signatures, stolen documents, and impersonation were common methods used to commit fraud.
Ripley.
In the 20th century, the invention of the Social Security number in the United States in 1936 introduced a new target for identity theft. Social Security numbers were initially intended for tracking workers' earnings for Social Security benefits, but became a key piece of personal identification, making them valuable to thieves. And then in the late 20th century, the proliferation of computers
early.
And the internet...
Because aren't we in the early 20th century now?
We're in the 21st century.
Oh, I thought you said 21st. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm an asshole. Keep going.
No, we must correct each other.
Right. No, you were totally right.
But no, that's all good, sweets. In the late 20th century, the proliferation of computers and the internet opened up new avenues for identity theft. Cyber criminals could steal personal information electronically, such as credit card numbers, passwords, social security numbers, through hacking, phishing, scams, and
that is right now, for sure.
For sure. And in this century, identity theft has become increasingly prevalent in the digital age, with data breaches at major companies exposing millions of individuals' personal information. Additionally, the rise of social media has provided fraudsters with more opportunities to gather personal data for identity theft.
And I think AI is going to help with that a lot also.
Help to stop it?
No. Help to proliferate it. Have you ever had any identity theft issues?
You know, there was that article, like, you could put your email in and you could find out if you were on the dark web, which is, I've never been on the dark web. Yeah. And my one email was on the dark web. There was, you know, data breaches from something. So they recommended changing passwords and stuff. But I haven't myself, that I know of, I haven't
That's
had
lucky.
That happen. Yeah, have you?
I have. Mine was in the 80s. Which is really weird. It's in the late 80s.
Jesus.
It was probably 1988 or 89. Somebody had, it's my own fault, and I don't know if I should even be saying this, but I had a friend who was in college. It wasn't, they were not 21. I wasn't either. Or I was. I was obviously, I think I was 22. And they wanted a California ID, you know, so that they could... A fake, they wanted my California ID so that, you know, you can get a driver's license and a California ID. So I got a California ID that I gave to them.
Okay.
And then they had my identity so they could go to bars and they could do stuff.
That was why.
Because they were like 19 or 20.
Oh, okay.
They were 20 probably.
Okay.
And, but that
they
led,
took it and...
that led to somehow back in New Jersey, they started renting cars and not returning the cars with my identity.
Oh. The same person, Fabe.
I don't know who it was.
Wow.
So then I get, it wasn't a friend of mine, it was a friend of a friend, so.
Oh. Man.
But I get a phone call from the Bunko division of LA.
Did you just say the
Bunko? Bunko. It's called the Bunko division in the LA Police Department. He sounded really sexy, too. The Bunko guy, he just sounded like he was really going to take care of me. I just, seriously.
Did you ever meet him?
Never met him.
Damn it.
He was so nice, but once I talked to him and he figured out and he investigated a little bit more, he realized what had happened, that you know, somebody did have my identity. It wasn't me. But I have two driver's licenses, so I can still remember my first driver's license number, but I got a whole new driver's license number.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an incredible story.
Yeah.
Was Bunko like an acronym for something?
It must be.
Okay,
because
Bunko sounds a
Bunko.
a little Dumbo-y.
I'm pretty sure it's Bunko.
Okay.
Yeah.
Apologies if everyone
That's
can hear Harvey.
That's a great name for a company.
Bunko.
Oh, shit. I should have named Camp Davy Paul Bunko.
Oh.
That's so good.
Well, you still
Maybe
could
I
rebrand.
Nah.
I love Camp Davy Paul. Big fan. Check it out, guys. Camp Davy Paul. Lots of beautiful art that Fabian created.
Okay.
All right. So you are now going to tell
us
about...
We're going to talk about
Patricia
the author.
Patricia Heismith? No, I'm
kidding. Heismith. Yes. Patricia Heismith. Patricia Heismith is the author of The Talented Mr. Ripley. But there's a really fascinating story behind her also. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. She was an American novelist and short story writer known for her psychological thrillers, including the famous... Ripleyad is what they called because it's a trilogy, I think. A series of books centered around the character of Tom Ripley. Here are some intriguing facts about her. She originally started, by the way, writing comic books. And this was really, really early in comic book days. She worked for 5 or 7 years doing comic books. I'm off script here, but this is something that I know.
Yeah.
She wrote comic books that The Black Terror... you know, it was before and during World
War
II.
Were they particularly, I know a lot of comic books are dark. Were hers particularly dark?
Yeah, they weren't superheroes with superpowers. They were private investigators. They were superheroes who have to be detectives, you know, like Batman kind of things because,
right.
you know, no superpowers, but not Batman. And she worked there for years and until she realized she could make more money freelancing. It was $55 a week and she had to have two stories per week, two full stories per week, $55.
Wow.
And she realized she could make more money on her own freelancing, which she did. But I think that the writing of those comic books really helped to
honed her skills.
For sure.
And
for
gave
sure.
her probably gave her some great ideas for future.
For sure. Well, you know, you have to, when you're writing comic books, you have to imagine what that visual is going to look like.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
like doing a storyboard for a movie. So
yeah.
it kind of makes sense that would act really, really help her. She wrote Strangers on a Train in 1950.
One of the greatest Hitchcock, in my opinion, truly.
And truly, it is.
I love most of his, especially his 60s movies. But
which was then readapted as Throw Mama from the Train.
Oh, my gosh.
With Danny DeVito, remember?
That scene where he kept calling from the different phone booths within a span of like 20 seconds.
No.
He would hang up and call back and he'd be at a different location.
That was a great
Irwin.
Movie.
Right.
I need to see this. The mom.
Woman that played
oh my
the
God.
She loved
was,
that she movie.
Was, yeah, I have
my
to see that
Chris
again.
My brother Chris loves that movie.
I have to see that again. That was a great movie.
Actually,
great
I
movie.
Do too.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Oh, but Strangers on a Train, just before we move on, and I know we have a lot to cover, so we're going to get there, folks. Just the whole the concept alone is fascinating.
Of which?
Strangers on a
oh,
Train.
Sure.
I mean, and,
sure.
and that the one carried it out to the horror of the other one who then had to carry out. The,
right.
It's just,
right.
If you haven't seen it, I'm sure a lot of our audience have, but check out Strangers on a Train, guys. Really amazing.
It's kind of, and it's you can tell that it would be a precursor to Ripley. You know, because
oh, yeah.
Ripley
yeah.
does a lot more than what happens in that movie. So it just makes, it's almost like a, like it was her testing ground to see how far can I go? And
absolutely.
She could go much further and she did.
Absolutely. And the credit card fraud that he's, not credit card, the check
the banking,
fraud
yeah.
that he's doing in the beginning speaks to this topic.
She had a lifelong interest in psychoanalysis and human psychology, which is reflected in the complex, psychologically nuanced characters that populate her novels. She loved snails, which is a really weird thing, and I need to look that up. She loved snails. She would go to cocktail parties sometimes and bring a clutch, her handbag, filled with snails, live snails, that she would use as a conversation starter, and people just thought she was really, really bizarre.
That would be a little... Do
it
you
is,
think that's a little... I mean, I think
no,
it's
a
little
bizarre.
Bizarre.
It is bizarre, but I'm curious about that. She wrote a book called The Price of Salt, and she wrote it under a pseudonym, and it was in 1952, just a couple of years after she had done Strangers on a Train.
Right.
And it was a groundbreaking novel because it was a sympathetic portrayal of a lesbian relationship. It was later made in 2015 into a film, and they used her name. They didn't use her pseudonym. They used her name.
Oh.
And it was Carol with Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. And if you think about it, if you read a little bit more about Patricia Highsmith, you'll understand that a lot of that is autobiographical.
Oh, Fabian,
that
even
story
more
with
interesting.
Her. Yeah, it's she was a she
what
was.
What does misanthropy mean?
It's the opposite of philanthropy. She was just
oh.
she was a damaged kind of interesting person. She was. We know this now. She was very anti-Semitic and said and did really, really horrible, horrible things. In spite of the fact that she had two of her greatest loves were two of her greatest loves, women loves, were Jewish women. But she was really. I don't need to tell you too much. You can Google it and you'll find out how
wow,
interesting
Fabian.
She was a interesting person. She was not a good person. She was not a kind person. She was friends, actually, with Truman Capote, which is really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's fascinating. There was, and he would encourage her to, you know, go
to
a little bit further.
To the dark.
Yeah. She was friends with Gore Vidal. She was friends with a lot of gay authors, obviously. And she lived in Europe. She lived in England for a long time. She lived in Switzerland for a long time.
Yeah.
But this makes me think that she... The more I read about her, the more I think that Ripley, when people say, I wonder who she based this on. Did she base it on anyone? I think she based it on herself. Because
an alter ego, even.
Well, Ripley,
or even more.
Ripley would, in the books, he associates with all these very successful, rich people.
Right. Yeah.
Beautiful people.
And
right. That in his heart, in his mind, he is completely judging and thinking they
well,
are horrible.
Like,
and they're
Capote's mother wanted to be the
yes,
beautiful
exactly.
people.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
But,
so he probably
and
saw that.
Judging and judging them like these, look at these assholes, look at these rich assholes. They,
yeah.
have, they have everything. They've got everything.
Yeah, they don't
And
know.
That's what right. Ripley's character was like. That's what right. she was like, too. And I think that's why she was so anti-Semitic, too. I think there's a big correlation there with that, too. She believed she was in that same sphere of people who believed that Jews controlled everything. They controlled banks and they controlled Hollywood. They controlled everything. They had the power. So, and then she would have...
people think that, yeah.
They do. And she had the Jewish lovers. And
yeah.
She was heartless. One of her girlfriends, who adored her, she was not monogamous. She was not a kind lover, to say the least.
Wow.
She was an aggressive lover. She was really into the physicality of it and described her women
almost masculine.
Very, very, very much so. And she knew that her girlfriend was distraught and upset and didn't want her to leave and didn't want her knowing that she was going to go see another woman. And she went anyway. And that lover attempted suicide.
Oh my!
And she didn't even find out about it till days later, till a friend said, "Oh, by the way, so
and
so."
She didn't care.
No, she. And it is a really weird, weird, damaged sort of life that this woman had.
Just to circle back, you mentioned that in her private journals she did write about deep emotions and vulnerabilities and struggling with her identity and the norms at the time.
Yeah.
So you wonder, would she have been different today if she would have been more accepted? Or did that not being accepted create that person?
Well,
we can't know because
you know, it was a different time. But
the
idea of struggling with her identity in the way that it was with in Ripley also is the same thing. The idea of keeping that the homosexuality completely hidden.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And who can know? I mean, she'd be born, if she had been born, you know, 50 years later.
It could have been totally.
A very different story, but I don't know.
Ripley, it just has opened up an entire Pandora box for you and I. And
it really has.
If you haven't seen it, stop everything and watch it this evening. Or
and if you think you've
you
seen
can.
It because you've seen the movie, amazing
which I watched
Anthony
again.
Minghella, I love that movie. So much. It is one of my favorite movies.
And in watching it again, it was so well done, so parallel to the series, and yet different in certain
nuances. They changed a lot in it.
They did.
They added characters, and the way things were play out is different. The ending is very different than what the novel is.
Very much.
This miniseries is definitely closer
to the
novel.
Book.
For sure.
That. Interesting.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Dickie, I really loved. I mean, who doesn't love Jude Law? But Dickie in Ripley, as opposed to the movie, his name John something. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. The man that plays Dickie, he just played it so decently, and you liked him so much.
We're talking about Jude Law.
No, we're talking about the guy that played it in the new one.
Yeah.
I really liked him a lot.
I did too. You know, he just seemed like he was very sympathetic to this person.
Yeah, he seems kinder than Jude Law's character was.
Jude Law was Jude Law, both characters in the film are very different than they are in the novel.
And much more sympathetic and kinder.
Matt Damon's character, the big difference, I don't want to ruin this, and I'm not going to give you any endings or anything, but Matt Damon's character becomes charming. He learns, he absorbs what he's learning from Jude Law, who is pure charm. Jude Law is closer to the Alain Delon version of the original version of Ripley, the French version.
But in the French version,
Alain
Delon is playing
Ripley.
Ripley.
He's playing Ripley, and he's very, very charming. In the Anthony Minghella film, Matt Damon is closer to that, but they made Jude Law's character closer to Alain Delon. He's so charming. He can sing, he can dance, he can dress really well. He's so talented. In this one, in the film, Dickie is talentless. He has zero talent, but he's charming.
Very charming.
In this one, Ripley has zero charm. He has zero
in the series.
He's boring.
He really has made him dull.
He doesn't know he can't do the quiet moments, the weird silences between people.
He's
awkward and off.
Yeah.
And then you see him gradually get better. But in the film, Matt Damon immediately starts to pick up and mimic.
He
mimics what he's seeing. He was. He was.
And I love Andrew Scott, but also the murder of Freddie in each film was very different.
Yeah.
And the one in the series, I think, was really violent.
It really was. Violent. It was. And much more so, I think.
Yeah,
it
I
was.
Agree.
It was more personal. Right. It was more face to face.
I hope so. That wasn't, I think, no, I mean, it's not the end, you know, it's fine.
No,
they'll forget by the time they watch
it. It doesn't either. Matter because yeah. we know if you've seen the original one, you know that they die.
Right,
so.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's not that much difference.
All right. Now it's time to discuss some movies that are kind of interlocked with identity theft. It's captivated filmmakers for a long time and has allowed them to explore the consequences of assuming another's identity, often delving into issues of morality, legality, and personal transformation. Now, I have not seen The Great Impersonation, which is a World War 1935 movie based on a novel which tells the story of a British aristocrat who is impersonated by a German spy during World War One.
You know, you never think that in the 30s they're going to have such great plots, but
do.
Man,
the
those plots are so
awesome
good.
Movies.
I know.
They're some of my favorites.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah.
Also, the pre-code, which that should be a theme. The pre-code movies are just so much better.
Sure.
Like, so,
sure.
so great. Summersby, Fabian and I mentioned that earlier, set right after the Civil War, a man returns home claiming to be Jack Summersby. Jodie Foster, his wife, accepts him, but there are doubts to his true identity. And I saw it a while back, Fabe, but I do remember really liking it. I thought it was a really good movie.
Good.
Face Off, is that Nicolas Cage
yeah.
and John Travolta?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen it, but I know of it.
I think that you couldn't pick two more perfect people to be in that type of a movie. They are interchangeable.
One's an FBI.
They're interchangeable. They're perfect. And they were both really good in it.
They swap identities through a surgical procedure.
Their faces, literally.
Unique exploration of identity and revenge.
I think
wow,
it's a great
that's
movie.
A cool
really.
Concept.
I'm surprised they haven't remade that film. I'm really surprised. Because that's from 1997.
Yeah, that could be due for a remake.
Yeah.
Well, I think all of us remember Catch Me If You Can with Leo, who,
yeah.
you know, as you know, I'm not a huge Leo fan, but God, he was good in that, and so was Tom Hanks. The true story of Frank Abagnale? I'm guessing if he's Italian. Frank
Abagnale.
Because I know my Italian friend, you always pronounce the vowels. Before his 19th birthday, successfully performs cons worth millions of dollars before his 19th birthday, posing
wow.
as a Pan Am World Airways pilot, a Georgia doctor, and a Louisiana parish prosecutor. That was a fantastic, fantastic movie.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I did. I wouldn't see it again, but yeah, I liked it.
You wouldn't? I haven't turned it on again, but I just
yeah.
remember thinking it was
yeah, it was
really,
good.
Really
I enjoyed
good.
It for sure.
Identity, Liam Neeson is in that, and I remember that
this was
a
great
really good movie.
I thought John Cusack was in it.
Oh, forgive me. That's a different one. John Cusack is in
that was
one.
A great movie because it had you wondering up till the very end. It was really well done. It was really good.
Yeah, I don't see it's been
high tension.
So long, I don't remember.
I just remember how I feel watching it. The Bourne Identity, absolutely.
Hands down, one of my
one
all time.
One of the best.
I mean, I'm a huge Matt Damon fan.
But you know, if we bring up The Bourne Identity, you know you and I have to bring up one of our all-time favorite films. And it all ties back to Thelma and Louise. You know why?
Why?
Gina fucking Davis.
The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Is a remake of the Bourne Identity, but
are
with
you?
A woman.
It is.
It's the
it
same
is.
Idea. It's a woman who has amnesia and doesn't
God.
Realize that
Samuel
she's...
Samuel L. Jackson, guys, The Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina
Such...
Davis.
It is the most
I
90s movie
so...
you will ever
oh,
see.
Oh, God. And she bleaches her hair and she slicks it back like
and
an
And when
assassin.
She's bleaching her hair, she's looking in the mirror and the zombies, she's not there, is playing, "Well, no one told me about
yeah.
it." And
she's
a brunette 1 second. She closes the medicine cabinet.
Blonde.
And then she's
oh
bleach blonde with smoky eye
I know.
Makeup that is amazing. It's so good.
It is such a good movie, guys. If you have not
It's a
seen
terrible
that.
Movie, but it's oh, so I, good.
I disagree.
I have well, watched
it's,
it.
It's can't be bad.
I probably watched it about 20 times. I'm not even kidding. I owned it.
That's what I'm saying.
I loved it it's so a, much.
So it is not terrible. It is a fantastic it is so campy of
its
time. Movie.
It's kind of the same time as Face Off and all
and
of those
just
movies.
And it's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable movie.
The music, the
fun.
Everything. When the bad
and
guy.
It's Christmas. There's Christmas
it's theme, like, people consider it a Christmas
yeah,
film.
Yeah.
There's the when the bad guy says, I'm gonna kill you. And the way the camera comes in and the way the music, it's so cheesy.
It's
and then
so
she
bad.
Says, you know, the idea of I'm gonna see you dead before right before he's about to kill her. Oh, I'm gonna kill you.
But isn't she on the medieval rack that where she's getting her body stretched?
And no, it's in a farm. It's a farm, and it's one of those
the
windmill.
Steam wheel, or the windmill.
Yeah, the
okay.
windmill that not, it's a water mill.
Like,
I don't know what you call it.
An instant torture device.
Yes, and they tie her to it, and she's wearing a negligee, and they put her underwater to torture her so that she'll talk, and then. They bring her back up and she's spitting out water and she says, are you going to talk? They ask, are you going to talk? She goes, I'm not going to talk, but I'm going to kill you. The next scene, they wheel her underwater again and she manages, I won't tell you too much, she manages a way out. She gets a gun from a body that's in the water. When they wheel her back up, that free arm that she has aims right at him and shoots him in the head.
Oh, it's so sad. And he's such a dick that you're so satisfied.
Oh, my God. You want them to die
oh,
so badly.
Oh, my God.
But my favorite scenes are the
I
scenes with her daughter.
Movie.
She has a little girl.
Yes.
They're going to kill them both in a freezer. But they're going to kill them in a freezer. She figures out a way to light gasoline in a freezer that goes out of it. And when every time, what I loved about her is that every time something horrible and somebody says, that little fucking brat of yours, that little bitch brat, they say something horrible. She looks at the little girl and will say something like, should we get a dog? Like she said, it was really endearing to not make her panic and hugs her and then. Proceeds
oh,
to
right.
she
that.
Proceeds
yeah.
to blow the shit out of the door of that freezer.
It's what who you want. It's the alter identity that all of us wish we could have.
Oh my God, you have no idea.
Far.
You know, going back to identity.
I love that you love that movie
because
that
we all have
so
that.
Happy.
Don't we all have that
oh
that
God.
Fantasy of
oh
you know
God.
When somebody
kicking ass
when somebody you know you're at a grocery store and somebody's an asshole and
oh,
you don't have the
yeah.
comeback. You don't have the
oh yeah.
You know, and you think about it on the way home to the car. Shit, why didn't I say
I
this?
I know.
This is a woman, a character
who
can
do it
in the moment right there.
I need to
it's
take
a
moment in this podcast, and we are going to run long. There was a moment for me in a supermarket, and I did say exactly what needed to be said, and I'm going to tell the story right,
all right.
now.
All right.
It was 2020, so, you know, 10 people were allowed in
Trader
Joe's.
Sure, oh, sure.
We all have our masks
yeah.
on, and it was, like, really 2020, so, like, everyone was still...
a minute.
What?
Before you say anything, I'm looking out for you. You're not going to come across as a Karen, right? There's not going to
no,
be,
not at
okay,
all.
Good.
Very much Al Pacino
okay.
Godfather.
Oh, okay,
all right,
okay,
go.
Good,
go.
All right.
Here we go. She, on the other hand,
all
is
right.
a Karen.
Good,
all right,
okay,
here we go.
Good.
So I'm in Trader's, and this woman comes in behind me, and like everywhere I go, she's like 2 feet behind me, and I'm like talking to myself, like, don't get upset. It's what it is. Like, just stay out of her way. I don't like people like right up close behind me. It's
especially if there's only 10 people in the store.
That's
why?
What I'm saying. She was just up my ass. I go to the frozen aisle and I take one thing from one side of the case and I go over to my cart and I put it in my cart and I move my cart over and there was a cart and she was about 15 feet away from the cart getting stuff. And so I bring my cart over and I'm leaning in to get stuff and she screams at the top of her lungs. Excuse me, you just cut in front of me, like just as an insane, like screaming, walks through me and the case, like squishes the big boobs to get past me to get back to her cart, and I just stare at her and I watch her the whole way, and I whispered, you know, you've been up my ass since you walked in here, and I'm gonna need you to back off. And she was just like. Because sometimes the accent does pay, like you can,
oh yeah,
you know what I mean. And so she just is like, she stares at me, and she turns around, and then I turn and look, and there's like a 40-year-old guy with a handheld cart just staring with his eyes like saucers.
Oh, he was probably disappointed. Hoping, he wanted fist fight. He wanted, where's the mud? We need mud. These ladies need to be wrestling.
Of course, I'm not that person. So I get in the car and I call Susie and I'm like, I just had this. I was like shaking because it's really not who I am. But I did handle it like Michael Corleone would have whispered, you know, you got up my ass.
Yeah.
No,
that's about, you know what, I'm gonna remember this.
Yeah.
That's what I'm, if somebody fucks with me, I'm just gonna whisper like,
you know, listen, asshole. Fuck off.
Right. You know what, asshole? You get the fuck away from me.
People respond to whispering.
It's scary. It's scary. I can see that.
Apologies, guys. I had to tell Fabian that story. He wasn't,
you know what's
aware
sad is that while you're telling me that story, I understand all of it and I feel for you and I think, I wonder if that poor woman was just so stressed out because it was early COVID and people didn't know what was going
to
happen.
She attacked somebody that like literally was doing nothing to her.
I know. But
it was, if I would see your point, if I was being overtly aggressive, I simply
would
have
been
the aisle.
She was like, the aggressive one, yeah, for sure.
Anyway, but I hear you. Kindness would be to, something was clearly going on. All right.
You know what movie is not mentioned, I think, in our list is, what's the one, the one with Betty Davis where she plays a twin? You know.
Oh, and that's the one that Carol Burnett did over and over. Remember the Carol Burnett, she did the black and the white dress. Remember there was like the, no, there was a twin theme.
Oh, I don't remember the twin one,
oh,
with Carol,
God,
Burnett.
It was a total take on the Betty
Davis.
It was
called Dead Ringer.
Dead Ringer.
That was Betty Davis, Dead Ringer, and it was great where she assumes the life of her sister after she kills her, who's rich because, you know, people are after her, her life sucks, and then thinking she, you know, the grass is greener on the other side, little does she know her sister was involved in some shit too.
Yeah, there is no I really thought there was a Carol Burnett take on that. I think I'm thinking of something else.
It was Carol Burnett's take on Gone with the Wind.
Well, that I saw it in a window and had to have it. But yeah, that was a good episode with Betty.
There's a lot of movies, you know, where
single white female.
Oh my God, that was a great movie. The end of its time. So of its time.
100% agree. The Net. I mean, who's not a Sandra Bullock fan?
Yeah, but it was so early in the beginnings of what the internet was going to be that I think a lot of people missed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was ahead of its time. It's something that could be redone and it would be more interesting, but it was just too ahead of its time.
I was into it then. I really was because it was so she was using like the floppy disks.
Yeah.
Like, that's what was crazy.
Think of all that, all the information she was able to grab on that little floppy disk. The identity of a half a person. Truly, I think I have 25% of this person's information on my floppy disk. Let me get three more.
I know.
So I can complete it. Remember those?
We didn't cover Unknown. That's the Liam Neeson one. And that was a great movie that I did watch. You know, not the greatest movie you're ever going to see, but like watchable. He has a serious car accident. And when he wakes up, he discovers another man has assumed his identity. And no one, not even his wife, believes him. I'm going to just say it because I doubt people are going to go watch that movie. He was an undercover agent, and so she couldn't admit that she knew him, the wife.
I don't remember that.
Because they were on an assignment.
Oh.
So that was actually not bad for like
that's interesting.
A Liam Neeson blow him up, beat him up action.
The other Hitchcock, there's that other Hitchcock movie in there, Spellbound. Which
we mentioned Spellbound in the other
week,
one, classic, Ingrid Bergman. Gregory
just so
Peck.
Everybody knows, there was also a sequel to The Talented Mr. Ripley in 2002.
Oh, yeah. What was the name of
it? It was
that
not the same director. It was Ripley's Game, which is the name of the novel that she wrote in 1977.
Right.
And it continues
who's
the story.
Do you know who's in
Tom
it?
Malkovich.
John Malkovich.
Tom Malkovich. John Malkovich plays Ripley. And not to ruin it for anybody, John Malkovich is in this miniseries.
Please. I don't remember him.
Are you
How
fucking
do I
kidding
not?
Me?
I know. Wait. Fuck, I don't remember.
John Malkovich is the other con artist in Venice that he sits down with that gets him the ID.
Right.
He's like, what do you do? And he goes, well, I'm an art dealer. He goes, yeah, I'm an art dealer too.
Yes.
They sit down.
Yes.
If you notice the scene, they're sitting with a little round table between them, and it's a perfectly symmetrical mirror image of the two of them sitting because they're...
I didn't notice that. Both, you are so good at noticing this shit.
They're both con artists. They're both... Right. And they recognize each other. So it's like a mirror image. They don't have to say what they are. They know what they are. And they use these little code words. Oh, I'm an art dealer. Interesting. I'm an art dealer too.
Wow.
And that's that. That's all they need to do. In fact, when John Malkovich, remember, gives him his card, he opens his card case and he has one for every country, like in London, one for Switzerland. Oh, he's got everything. And then he hands a card.
Well, you know, it's like, what's interesting about the Ripley thing too, though, is that, you know, like petty crime guys that aren't normally murderers, like what drives him to murder Dickie on the boat is, I think, just abject, not wanting to lose what little he's gained in the scenario, but I think just also abject jealousy of who Dickie is. Like, what do you think is the reason he does?
Well, I think in the novels it's more clear. He loathes these people. He loathes their lives, and he loathes the entitlement, the everything that they have. They have no idea how easy they have it.
Right.
You know, and they've got it so easy.
Right.
He wants all of that, and at the same time, he loathes everything about them. He wants it for himself. Doesn't see the irony in it. He doesn't see anything.
Yeah.
But he loathes these people.
He loathes them.
Completely.
So did you get an undercurrent of a crush that he had on Dickie, or was that...
Yeah, I did.
So I think that
in fact, Dickie mentions it. And in the Anthony Minghella film, it's very apparent.
It is.
Much more apparent.
Than the
series. I liked that it was more apparent.
Yeah, I agree. Because he almost has a disdain for, I can't remember the female character's name, but Marge?
Marge.
How could I not? My mother-in-law. Yeah. Marge.
The reason you couldn't remember it's because in the film she's played by Gwyneth Paltrow, who we all try to forget. I'm just kidding.
Don't get me started.
I have to tell you, that is her best role I've ever seen her in.
Oh, I agree.
She was perfect.
She was perfect. Well, she was good in that, and the remake of Dial M for Murder, Perfect Murder.
Was that Richard Gere?
That was Michael Douglas. Again, a man... Too old to be starring. However, it did have the great Viggo Mortensen, who I...
For sure.
Juicy, man.
What a babe.
My God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Frodo. Okay. The Island I Didn't See. Dave. Oh, Dave. That's a great movie. That's one of Peter, my husband's, favorite movies with... Kevin Kline.
I love
playing
him.
Playing the president. That's fun.
Kevin Kline Costner. I mean, Kline. I was gonna say Costner. Fine.
The Sixth Day. I haven't seen that. What's the? Yeah.
You know what? It, The Island is a interesting film because it's Ewan McGregor.
Oh, yeah.
It's Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson. And what makes it interesting is that they are clones.
Oh, yeah.
They're clones who are on some island.
Right.
Hence the name.
And, like a utopian island, right?
And so then this is where the identity part, who are they truly? You know, if you're going to look at it that way, everything we talked about with AI in those films, also Blade Runner, identity is a huge thing. And even in the sequel to Blade Runner.
How do you mean, Faye? What am I missing?
Because they don't know don't know if they're robots or clones or
yes,
whatever. So
is.
There's this whole
honey,
feeling of
yes.
Who am I? Am I real? Am I not real?
Right.
Deus Ex Machina, whatever you pronounce it, which I just watched recently again, is such a great film where he begins to doubt his own humanity, this guy, and he starts cutting his arm to see if he's got wires because he can't tell if he's real
Jesus.
Or not. But I think those kind of work together, identity-wise.
I think you're really smart to bring them up.
I'm just really smart.
You're just really smart.
I think.
Now, we talked about Ripley's Game, right? You brought that up already.
Yep.
Spellbound, Mr. Brooks. Okay, Mr. Brooks, Kevin Costner, William Hurt is the voice inside his head. So Kevin Costner is a serial killer, but he's a stand-up, successful man in real life, but he's also a serial killer. He tries to stop, but in his voice, the evil voice is William fucking Hurt.
Who's great. I love him.
And that shithead comic that I could never stand, Dane Cook or Dane...
Uh-huh.
Don't
Carrot me. Head. Carrot Top.
No, Dane... Dane Shithead.
Yeah.
He's in it, and he is the antagonist in...
He's going to get killed, obviously.
He witnesses Costner murdering... He witnesses Mr. Brooks murdering somebody, and then blackmails him to keep murdering. It's a silly
He blackmails him to keep murdering. Well, you know, the irony of that is that that's the theme of Ripley's Game.
Oh.
Ripley cons someone into doing murder for him.
So,
which is sort of a combination of Strangers on a Train.
For sure.
You know, so there you go.
There you go.
So there you have it.
Guys, I think we have covered a lot. These films just, you know, they span a range of genres: science fiction, documentary, comedy, psychological thriller.
And there's so many more.
I thought of the one, but you thought of a few. Like, you're right. It's a big theme, I think, for filmmakers.
Of course.
And, you know, it is also kind
what actor doesn't want that, right? I mean, it's an actor's dream to have to play more than, be the same person playing different characters. Yeah. It's a dream come true.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, guys, we've reached the portion of the show where we give our pockets of wisdom to those who have written into the show. If you want to submit your questions, which we would really appreciate, please email pocketspod@gmail.com. That is pocketspod@gmail.com. Dear Agony Auntie and Uncle, I recently became engaged to my boyfriend, John. John and I have been in a relationship for 3 years. I deeply love him, but I'm facing a problem with his parents who seem to dislike me. His parents often behave in a passive-aggressive manner toward me. They have sent me threatening texts such as, "Don't get married to my son," and "You're a bad influence on my son." Why do I feel like they're not American? They also said that they would not be attending the wedding.
Are you kidding? They sound super, super American to me.
I don't know. I'm meaning in punctuation. Recently, they stopped all communication with John. He's their son. John has always had a close relationship with his father, and not seeing him for weeks has really affected him. Although he tells me he's okay, I can see that he's not. He is often hostile toward me, blaming me for ruining his relationship with his parents. He refuses to talk to me about this, and when I bring it up, he will ignore me for the next few hours until I apologize. This is hurtful, and I'm considering canceling the wedding. However, I understand that he is tremendous pressure at the moment, and I'm not sure what to do. Can you please help me with some advice? Confused in New Jersey. The first thing I have to say is, she's either a pathological liar and has done something obvious, or I feel really sorry for this woman who is getting blamed without any explanation for what I don't know how to approach this.
I think that the way she asks the question makes zero sense to me, because they've been together for 3 years.
Yeah.
She says that he's had a good relationship with his parents prior to her.
Right.
And now he stops talking to his parents because he's marrying this woman.
And then resenting her for doing so.
And resenting her because he's lost the relationship with his parents.
Right.
But it doesn't explain at all. What do you mean you're a bad influence on my son? We don't know what that means. Is she an alcoholic? Does he party more now because of this? Is he irresponsible with money? Is he doing things? We don't know what that changes. And
So that's what I mean. Like, don't get married to my son. You're a bad influence on my son.
Yeah.
Could they be from another country?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter.
Well, I'm thinking cultural reasons why she's not.
She would have mentioned that. She would have said.
Yeah, that's true. So it's not that. You're right.
She would have mentioned that, because that's a given. But there's a lot she didn't mention.
There is a lot she didn't mention. I feel like, unless, let's just take her at her word.
But the idea, even if it's true, and this is all true, and there's nothing wrong, and she's great, and the fact that he's blaming her for this.
And not talking to her until she apologizes?
Until she apologizes.
For doing absolutely nothing.
For being herself. Which is really... For being herself. I would tell her absolutely cancel the wedding and try to figure this out.
Yeah.
With his parents, or if you
love him a lot, go to therapy or try to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I hate to say this, this is not a relationship to continue in, because it will not be.
You see, what I don't understand is why, I mean, I would, instead of her, if I'm her, and I'd have to be apologizing to him because of the relationship that is being ruined with his parents, I would be upset at him, not apologizing to him, because, unless maybe that's the reason that she, if
I would say completely pissed off, Fabian.
You need to talk to your parents and tell them.
What the fuck? This is not my fault.
But wouldn't you think that he'd be able to make a clear case and say, Mom, I love this person and I'm going to marry this person. And this is the person I love and you should respect that. That they're still that adamant against it, unless he didn't do a very good job of, defending her, saying she's amazing and I love her and she's made my life better.
I know.
But we don't know any of that because there's not enough in this.
There isn't enough info. I think couples therapy.
For sure. Right off the bat, the idea that you're having to apologize to him.
That's number one red flag for me, actually.
That is. That's the thing.
And if the parents are so aggressive, I wouldn't feel comfortable. You know, I have to say, like, I was lucky in that Peter's parents, that they were welcoming of me, particularly his mother, and his father passed.
In spite of your hump.
In spite of my old lady hump that's developing as I lean into this microphone. But yeah, like, she was very welcoming, even though I did not meet any of the criteria that she had for her son's spouse.
Right. She expected someone over 5'7".
She expected someone at least her height or taller. I am, 5'3" at best. She expected a Christian. She expected a college graduate. She expected a lot. And I was none of those things, and yet she embraced me.
Yeah.
The thing is, I was present when she was very stressed when her husband passed, and that's what I know how to deal with.
Yeah.
So I know how to deal with that kind of drama and stuff, and I think that's what maybe impressed her and that she accepted me. But
you know what would impress me?
What
impresses me is that my son loves you, right? That's what, if my son loves you and I trust my son and I love my son,
right,
and my son loves you and you make him happy, then
that is it. Period.
That is it. You know, that's all that needs to be there, I think. So
hopefully she's young and I don't know, my gut, get out. But before you get, because you can change John, but I'm worried that she's never going to change those parents and what they think about her. So I just feel like...
Well, she's not marrying the parents, so who cares?
She's not, and they will die at some point.
But she needs... But that resentment is going to fester.
It's
going to
color everything.
It is.
Including any children they might have.
Before getting married, I would definitely have a talk about that, for sure.
All right, next up.
All right. Recently, I received a Facebook friend request from Jake, a man I had an affair with 20 years ago. This was more than an affair because Jake and I were best friends. We talked about everything. I would have left my then boyfriend for him back then, as that relationship was going south fast. Jake and I both ended up with other people and lost contact. He tells me that his relationship with his wife is like their roommates and that he is seeing someone on the side but would like to catch up, quote unquote. I'd love to do this because he started talking about our past and our amazing sexual chemistry, reminding me of what it was like to be with him. I'm conflicted because I'm in a relationship where, due to medical reasons, my partner can't perform sexually anymore. Now I can't stop thinking about Jake, but I have concerns. What should I do? Signed, Old Love.
Danger, danger. I don't know. It's tricky. I mean, her relationship, they're not sexual anymore. I'll be honest. I know that many people have affairs and it's very common and it's what a lot of people do. I don't know how I feel about it, like.
There's many ways. There's something about talking to someone from our past, particularly someone we dated.
Because they knew you then.
Think about just 20 years ago. I can't because I was already married. So it has to go much further. 40 years ago for me.
Right.
And think about what those emotions were like with the people that we dated, right? The people that we were going out with.
Right.
Everything was the ultimate.
Oh,
every kiss was the greatest kiss.
Yes.
You could have worked a 12-hour shift, at the fish market on the Redondo Beach Pier. But you'd come home
and
shower to get the fish smell off, but you were up and ready for anything because you wanted to be with that person.
I'm so in love.
You could work 3-hour day today,
and
you come home and you're like, honey, I'm exhausted. I'm sorry. It's just what happens.
Right.
When you're young, everything's exciting. I think we get caught up in that. And so she's looking at something about what she was like 20 years ago. And of course it's exciting. Yeah. It's amazing.
And he's bringing that memory back.
And of course they will have great sex. There's no doubt about it.
That doesn't go away. I agree.
They will have great sex. Well, not only that, the idea that time has passed and that you're with one person who maybe you don't do the same things with, that you don't feel the same comfort level with. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you're young, you do more, you know, you're more adventurous, you know.
I think back.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's really enticing. You know, I'm not encouraging her to have an affair, but I would encourage her to, and you know, I don't know, maybe the husband is not that, but you know, to say to her husband, if he can't perform sexually, if she would say to him, I need sex, and I have an opportunity with someone from my past. So it's someone I know. It's not a complete stranger. And just for the sex of it, although it's really dangerous because the chances that they'll both leave their spouses is huge, because he's saying his wife is basically a roommate. Right. That's what he says. So this is not going to work out. I'm just saying this is not going to end well, probably. But I understand the...
I'm just thinking of Breaking the Waves. Do you remember Breaking the Waves? So you just described, basically. Remember he...
Yeah, what a movie. Oh, my God.
He's paralyzed, right? And he can't have sex. And he asks his wife to have sex with other men. And she was not... I mean, she was already a bit autistic or...
You know, she's special. She's the psychic in... Last week's episode or the week before, about AI, two episodes ago, she was the psychic in Minority Report.
Oh, who could predict the future. Watson. Yeah. Emily Watson. She's great. Stellan Skarsgård.
Oh no, it was Samantha Morton. Never mind.
All right.
I always get those two confused. Emily Watson is such an amazing actress.
Emily Watson is pretty amazing. This is a 1996 film, guys. Breaking the Waves, really independent, but. And hard to watch in some ways.
It really was.
She was so not wanting to
do it. Who directed that? It had to be the Danish guy. Was it the Danish guy? Because that was an amazing movie. And it was really...
Lars von Trier?
Yeah. The Danish guy. Lars von Trier. He did the Bjork and Catherine Deneuve film that's set in Seattle. Remember, and she's losing her sight. Bjork, she was nominated for an Oscar. She went to the Oscars wearing the swan dress.
That was swan dress. Oh, then, yeah.
The music in that. Remember, she has a fantasy life. She's losing sight.
Yes.
She has a son who's
Dancer
really, really
in the dark.
It's such a beautiful, hard to watch movie. He also did.
It's very hard to watch.
He did the movie with Nicole Kidman. He did two with Nicole Kidman. They're really. Really hard to watch.
What is it that he's doing?
Because he doesn't fuck around. He goes to the deep, deep parts of humanity. He's amazing.
Just briefly, I'm going off topic. Zone of Interest. Did you see it?
I started it.
Humming in the background that never left.
I started it and I had to stop because Dave was like, what are we watching?
That's Peter too. Yeah. I had to watch the rest of it the next morning. Yeah. And daylight is better to watch that movie.
My cousin Lorena actually texted me the same thing. She goes, have you seen
Zone of Interest?
What the fuck? Yeah. She went to the movies to see it in Argentina.
God, I couldn't even imagine that sound.
Yeah.
Jereen was on an airplane coming back from Cambodia. So
she watched that on a plane?
But it drowned out that... that drum, that humming fucking nightmare sound.
But that drone is supposed to...
But you can hear the screams and the shots.
But that humming is also the idea of this... The And I haven't seen it, but I know what it would represent.
The
factory,
course,
the idea of what is going on
100%.
Next door.
Guys, Zone of Interest is about Rudolf Hess, who was the commandant of Auschwitz, and he lived in a villa right... Abutted against the freaking camp. And it was like a paradise, if you could call it that. Because how those children grew up in those years that they were there with that hum. Anyway, we really digress, and we're really running over.
That might be another topic for another time.
Did we even give old love any advice about Jake? Should she see Jake or not? Yes or no? Let's call it right now. I'm going to say no, unless her husband's cool with it, then sure.
You know, the idea that Jake is only... that they've contacted each other and Jake is seeing somebody else... to me, that's the
it's an indicator, a red flag.
For sure. The fact that he's already having an affair
right.
is the reason not
he's
to.
He's not going to fulfill you unless you just
want a physical. No, he will fulfill you.
Yeah,
physically.
Physically.
He
but
will.
Not any more than that. And if that's cool, then I don't know. If you're not hurting anyone and no one knows, I'm not comfortable with stepping out on a marriage. I'm really not. Like, I don't think it's advice that we should condone.
You know, I try not to be judgmental. I try not to judge.
Well, I don't want to judge, but don't be married if you're going to step out. Don't commit.
There's different things for different people, so...
Yeah, that's true.
That's
very Puritan of me.
Different cases. I used to be that person. I used to be that person about everything.
Yeah.
Drinking, drugs, all of it.
And here we are.
I had no friends. If my friends did smoked pot... Forget it. They were not my friends. If they drank, they were not my friends. I was such a fucking Puritan. If they slept around, they were not my friends.
Wow.
So
yeah.
I lost a lot of friends because I was a fucking asshole.
Shame.
So I don't want to be that person anymore. And I know that it's different for different people. I think
right.
my advice to her would be...
Go with caution. How about that?
If she can't talk to her husband about it and say this is a possibility, if that's not
I think that would hurt him if he has a medical reason why they can't have sex.
Yeah.
You know, that would, he can't help it. I don't know.
I don't know. It's a tough one. This is a tough one.
We're stumped.
I want to tell her that she would have an amazing time and she's going to have the best sex she's had in a long time.
Yeah.
She will have
leave it in the motel room.
Yeah, if she can just do it and not.
Further.
Yeah, and not think about if you love your husband.
Right.
If you love your husband, do it.
Right.
If you don't love your husband and you don't want to change your life drastically, then don't do it. Because if you don't want to change your life and you're happy with the way your life is, the way you're living with this husband and how your home is and everything is, because if you do this and you decide you want to be with this person, all of that is going to change. Those are decisions that you have to really think about. If you want to do it just to time travel and remember what it was like back when and what, you know, you were like back when, then...
You're so wise.
I'm not
wise.
I don't know that that's good advice. But
well, it's open. It's not stunted advice. And
yeah,
I think there's something to be said for that.
I don't know. It's a tough call.
Good luck, old love.
Yeah,
good luck.
Good luck.
Listen, just a reminder, guys, follow us on Instagram at @pockets_podcast. Please like our page. Also, please rate and review the show on whatever venue you listen. And
don't forget about the playlist.
Don't forget about the playlist. Thank you, Fabian.
It'll be on our Instagram.
There'll be a link in the bio.
There's three there now. There'll be another link for this playlist. There's a link for the previous playlist too, which I recommend.
We'll just keep adding the playlist links,
basically, we will.
Guys.
Oh, yeah.
And then click on that and we'll include them on the Facebook pages. The playlist. Again, I hope some of you have listened to last week's. It was so wonderful. I look forward to listening to this one.
Well, you've got some really good ones this time around.
I'm excited.
Identity. Do you remember that song, Ode to Billy Joe?
Yeah.
The Tallahatchie Bridge, throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Yes.
Bobby Gentry.
Yeah.
You'll get to listen to that.
Oh,
I originally had Sinead O'Connor doing it.
Because
she does
it.
I changed it because you know what? Bobby Gentry was such a pioneer for her time. And she wore bell bottoms better than any human being is allowed to.
Pretty good bell bottoms. But no, I can't compete. Yeah.
So that's why I put that one. But I do want you to know that it starts off with Sinead O'Connor doing a Nirvana cover.
Oh.
Of All Apologies. And it is fantastic.
Oh,
and it suits the theme perfectly.
Wonderful, Fabian.
You've got a little bit of everything in it. It's a really good one. I highly, highly recommend it.
Awesome. Guys, thanks for listening. Please listen to that playlist. Listen to the podcast. Thanks for being our loyal fans while we build the little podcast that
could. For sure. And identity. Identity and who are you and facades. Who are you?
Who?
Wait till you hear the cover of that one. Are you in for a treat? All right.
See you next time, folks.
Bye, you guys.